Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Today, I have as guest Associate Professor at the Department of Philosophy at UCT, Eliza Galgut. And Eliza is also a poet, and this is where today's discussion starts in her role as poet. Eliza, welcome to Free Speech Matters.
Thank you, Sarah. It's very nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I've tended to be a little bit sort of amazed at some of the free speech issues that arise in the Anglosphere and with other free speech unions in places like the UK and Australia and New Zealand, because sometimes they are beyond bizarre. And I've always sort of said, you know, we have a much more robust free speech environment with fewer strictures. But you've just had an experience in your role as longtime writer and presenter of poetry that takes us into the area of cancellation. And so maybe Free Speech Union South Africa can't be as smug as it once was. Can you give us an idea of what exactly you encountered?
Sure, yes. I mean, I was also completely taken aback. So I was asked to read my poetry. There's a little group. There are two sort of main groups of poetry in Cape Town. The one is called Off the Wall, that was started many years ago by Hugh Hodge, who sadly passed away. And then there's been a kind of breakaway group called The Red Wheelbarrow. And I've read at The Red Wheelbarrow, I think about 2 years ago, I read. And then the founding member of The Red Wheelbarrow, Jacques Coutier, who was a friend of mine, asked me if I would read again in November. And I said, sure. And then as is sort of usual, they said, send around a photo and a bio and a poem. So I did. And the poem that I sent, I'd written the short poem about the Holocaust, and I sent that. And then a few weeks, I can't remember, but maybe 10 days or 2 weeks later, I don't know the exact timeline, I got a phone call from Jacques. And essentially he was saying, this isn't the right time and it's not a good idea to invite you. And he was a little bit coy about why. And then when I pressed him, I said, what is the reason? And he said, no, somebody in the group said they don't want you to read because you're a Zionist. And then I said to him, well, I mean, how do you know that? Did you ask why this person said that, first of all? Because I'm not a political poet. I mean, I am a Zionist, but I don't even understand what it means to be a Zionist. But I said, you know, where's this coming from? And he said, no, I don't know, but that's just what they said. And then actually I had to go. I couldn't stay on the phone. And I said, well, please email me. I want a full explanation of why and who was at the meeting. And, you know, I'll wait for your email. Well, the email never came. And then there were a couple of calls from Ed Burl. He's the other founding member of The Red Wheelbarrow. And Jacques also promised me an explanation, and nothing ever happened, you know. So they then did subsequently email Off the Wall, my group, because a few of the members of Off the Wall were very upset and kind of contacted them. And then they gave the sort of explanation, which I just think they cobbled together. It really doesn't make sense to me. So that was basically what happened. I got cancelled for being a Zionist.
And I see from an article in the Jewish Report, South African Jewish Report, that they build themselves as a sort of inclusive poetry space. As we've come to experience from anyone who uses the term inclusive, usually exclusion is what is going to happen. It just strikes me as very symptomatic of the time that, you know, exclusion is really the thing, and that one would have thought perhaps in an area like poetry there might be a much more open-minded response to it. A, were you surprised that this has happened at all? And B, do you know who complained? Do they indicate who objected to your presence?
I don't know who complained. I was very surprised. I mean, when Jacques phoned me up, I was very surprised. He gave me a bit of background. I mean, I can give you the, I don't know how much background you want. I can give you a little bit of background. I don't know if it's relevant, actually. But I mean, yes, by the way, inclusive, when I emailed Jacques, I did say that they should consider removing the word inclusive from their byline. So what had happened a couple of weeks or a week or so before, around the, it was just before the 7th of October. So off the wall, my poetry group, we have a readings every Monday night. And that particular Monday night, we didn't have anybody to read. And we thought, what should we do? We sometimes have, like the one evening we had a sonnet evening, for example. And so we had a new volunteer, and she suggested that we have some sort of vigil or some poetry reading in honor of the Palestinians on the 7th of October. And I and a couple of other people in Off the Wall said that would be completely inappropriate. First of all, we're not a political group, and to have a reading in honor of, you know, the people of Palestine on the 7th of October would be, would really be completely, it would be, I think, obviously completely inappropriate. So then this person said, well, she doesn't want to be part of a group that's not political, and so she basically left. But we left on relative good terms. But some of the people in the Red Wheelbarrow heard about what happened, and then in the they kind of said, well, the fact that Off the Wall doesn't want to hold a vigil for the Palestinians is indicative of the fact that we somehow support genocide and it's dehumanizing of the Palestinians, which is a total non sequitur, because in fact they haven't had a vigil or anything in, for the people of Palestine. Plus, neither they nor we have had anything for any other conflict that's happening, but we haven't been accused of being against the Uyghurs in China, for example. So it feels like, I mean, I suspect, and I have no proof for this, and I could be wrong, but I suspect that there was some, my Holocaust poem triggered them in a particular way, that they felt if they sent around a poem about the Jewish Holocaust, it would somehow be painting the Jewish people as victims, and at the moment they cannot be seen as victims, they need to be seen as perpetrators. And then they sort of found a reason to disinvite me. I mean, I have no evidence for this. But another reason they gave for disinviting me was a tweet that I wrote about 5 years ago from an account that's no longer active. You can only find it if I tried, I did a search, Eliza Galgut Israel, and then it comes up. But it's about 5 years old. And the tweet just simply points out the fact that the Cave of Machpelah is in the West Bank, what is now the West Bank, as an illustration of that the Jewish roots to Israel go back thousands of years. And then they refer to that as evidence of the fact that I somehow support the war, that, you know, and by implication they said I support genocide, which I actually think is a very defamatory thing to say. So that tweet, you know, it's impossible that I would have been disinvited for that. And not holding the vigil seems a bit, that doesn't seem a good enough a reason, because they themselves also didn't hold a vigil. So I honestly don't know. I don't know what the spark was that led to my disinvitation.
I mean, isn't this indicative of a problem with this whole with the conflict and the narrative around it? Is that the dominant and successful narrative, the pro-Palestinian narrative, has become is so pro has essentially so propagandistic and is has there are so many facts that can be challenged on it. But you know, if you're trying to challenge that narrative, you really come out as defensive. But it really is a factual problem. That in a way, it's a combination of people really sort of believing for good or for ill what they've heard without regard to the other side. And sorry, if you'd comment on that, because I'd then like to actually chat with you about the South African government's role in this. Let me go one at a time.
Yes, I mean, I do think you're right. I think that Israel has been demonized in a very particular kind of way. And I think part of the purpose of a demonization is to stifle debate. That's part of the purpose of the narrative, is that the debate is not welcome. In fact, if you want to have a debate, people will get very irate with you, as though, how could you possibly debate a genocide, right? And so the term, and I think the term genocide is also, I mean, the Red Wheelbarrow and others have been using this term genocide over and over again. And if you say Israel is not committing a genocide, you're seen as a genocide denier rather than as actually engaging in the real question of, you know, whether or not this, the Palestinians are in fact being murdered in this, you know, by Israel. And I think that's part of the narrative. The narrative is not to have a discussion. It's simply to push, you know, one perspective. I mean, to say that somebody is a Zionist, for example, is, you know, one can be a Zionist and in favor of a two-state solution. So one could be a Zionist and in favor of Palestinian national identity. Those things are completely compatible. But I think the Overton window has shifted so far to one side that to even claim that the Jewish state has a right to exist is now seen as implying that the Palestinians do not have a right to a state. It's really seen as a kind of either or situation, not as a both mm-hmm. and. So I think the demonization of Israel is, I mean, it feels like a witch hunt. It really feels like something mm-hmm. out of the malleus maleficarum, you know, that you can, a lot of the language is so unhinged from reality. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question about whether you can have free speech on issues where speech is no longer doing what speech ought to do, which is to engage in reasoned discussion. Whereas if speech is being used as a kind of magical, to express a kind of magical thinking, it's not speech anymore, it's doing something else. Mm-hmm. And I think they're playing a different game from the people who really care about free speech.
I've tended to increasingly hold the South African government liable for that Israel is committing genocide and all facts to the contrary are to be ignored, because they went to the ICJ with an extraordinary speed. They literally had started a process of discussion with the Israeli government that they hadn't completed, and they went. So one has to question why the timing, which was very early on. The other thing is, a whole lot of reports have come out, and most recently the ISCAP, the organization against the academic organization against anti-Semitism, sorry, I've just forgotten the full name, at Oxford, has released last week a comprehensive report about South Africa, and particularly the ANC's position in launching this action. And it's almost as if, by virtue of the court simply saying plausible fear of genocide, and that was as much as they really said about the whole issue, about that is all they said. They couldn't find Israel guilty. They couldn't even in any way hint at it. But by just making that statement, it became perverted to Israel is committing genocide. And in that sense, the South Africa achieved a certain result, and much of the report in ISCAP inclusive. So it's something that is by virtue of the relationship between the ANC and Iran, that's how it came about. And I don't know whether it's just the passion of believing the underdog, the victim, or whether it's actually terrified that they might not all be true.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that the case that the South African government brought against Israel has certainly not helped the situation and has definitely inflamed it. I mean, I listen quite a lot. There's a very interesting lawyer called Natasha Hausdorff who speaks a lot about Israel. She was in the Monk debate with Douglas Murray. Yeah. And her take on it is that it wasn't even that the ICJ declared that there might be a plausible case to think that genocide might be happening. It was all they concluded was that that they had jurisdiction, that South Africa could bring the case because that was the appropriate forum, but they didn't make any ruling at all on the facts about whether in fact genocide was plausibly happening. So they made a legal case about whether in a sense, whether the case could be brought, but no finding at all. And I think, but people have jumped exactly to the opposite conclusion that they made a finding against Israel. And I think what often happens as well, because, and I've certainly experienced this at UCT, which I can tell you a little about later if you're interested, but I think people in South Africa have taken the South African narrative and just imposed it on what's happening in the Middle East. And they see the Palestinians as the poor, oppressed black people and the Israelis as the white supremacists. And I think by South Africa taking this case to the ICJ, it kind of confirmed that particular narrative. And I mean, it's such a false narrative, right? But it's a very appealing narrative, especially if you have a kind of underlying anti-Semitism that's always ready to bubble up to the surface, given the right conditions. So I mean, South Africa's motivation is not clear. I mean, I know there were rumors about the ANC getting money from Iran just before the elections and things like that, which, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. But it's made it acceptable.
Yeah. Could it be even possibly an element of naivety on the part of the ANC, in the sense that the ANC obviously relied on its credentials as having negotiated peace and a settlement in South Africa, and there's much debate historically about exactly the full spectrum of what happened 30 years ago. But the problem for the ANC, and I'm diverting a bit, is that they don't understand a conflict that has a religious base. It's completely not in their wheelhouse, and they've sort of, I won't say stumbled in, because I think it's more deliberate than that, but that failure to see that they don't really have the credentials to speak on it, but they're very much living on past glory, I guess.
Yeah, that could very well be. I mean, I'm not a political analyst, and so you'd have a far better understanding of this than I would. But I do think the ANC does want to use its cachet as a sort of freedom fighter for the underdog. That's, I think, still the, for the ANC, its sort of greatest, badge, as it were. And perhaps they thought, well, this is a way for us to not reinvent ourselves, as it were, but kind of take us back to the days when we were fighting the good fight and engaging in the struggle, and now this is another struggle we can somehow get involved in. Although you'd think if that was their aim, they would try and broker peace between Israel and the Palestinians rather than just, take Israel to the ICJ.
And just a comment, sort of, I'd like to look at, just get your comment on. A couple of years ago, it must have been early lockdown, we had an informal address by James Lindsay, and he articulated something that had worried me about anti-racism and, victim colonial narrative. And he said, the problem with that sort of picking and choosing of who should fall within those particular categories, the ultimate result is likely to be genocide. And could he not be proven right in this case? That's where it's going.
Right. What did he mean, a likely result of these kinds of
that progressive postmodern ideology? I don't know if it's categorized ideology, but that whole philosophy of what we would colloquially call wokeism, where the answer to racism allegedly is it's anti-racism, but it becomes very selective as to who falls into the category of oppressor and oppressed, and that process of making those delineations could ultimately result in genocide. In other words, you make the case that the people you accuse of being the oppressor actually don't deserve to continue to exist, and I think he might have been very precise. I'm very concerned that that's part of the process that's happening now.
I think that's a very, very insightful thing that he said. I mean, I think it would in a way make sense of the vehement anti-Semitism that arose after October 7th, because even before Israel responded, there was really waves of anti-Semitism arose straight after the attacks on October 7th. And you could think that, well, one of the reasons for this is, if you think of, let's say, Israel as this, you know, colonizing superpower, if something absolutely terrible happens to the Israelis, in order for you not to feel any sympathy for them, you have to feel they deserved it. Mm. And they can only deserve something terrible that happens to them if they're supremely evil. Mm. So it kind of creates a split. I mean, I'm very interested in psychoanalysis, and Melanie Klein talks about splitting, where, you know, you have what she calls the kind of paranoid schizoid position. It's the very, very early stage in one's life where all good is put on one side and all bad is on the other. And there is no possibility to mediate between good and bad. And I think that's definitely characteristic of a lot of the discussion that's happening at the moment, right? There's just the split. And if, you know, Israel is all bad, then anything that happens to Israel and the Israelis must be their fault somehow. Mm. And then any retaliation is completely justified, you know. And it's a very dangerous rhetoric.
Yeah. And just concluding on the issue of being cancelled in presenting at a poetry reading, what sort of response have you had from your own group, the people around you, colleagues or friends? Have they shied away? Sort of, we support you, but we don't support, we, you know, we can't say we're supporting you. Has it been much more positive or negative?
A lot of people have supported me privately. Mm-hmm. So I've had some well-known poets email me to say they support me. My own particular group was very supportive, and they sent out a letter in support to all our members. So they were very, very supportive. Another poet friend of mine, I'll mention his name, actually. I don't think he'll mind. Douglas Reed Skinner. He's a friend of mine. He's quite a well-known poet. He's also the editor of a poetry journal that I publish in, and he was incredibly supportive. And he was scheduled to read at the Red Wheelbarrow the following week, actually. And he refused. He said he's not going to. It would seem as though he's somehow endorsing their position. So I've had a lot of very private support. Public support, I don't know, because, you know, it's not so clear what the fora would be for people to. I don't know if anyone's written to the Red Wheelbarrow, but I've had a lot of support also from the Jewish community, a great deal of support. My old, I'm on a WhatsApp group with my year from school, and a lot of people were incredibly supportive. One schoolmate set up another WhatsApp group for poetry, and he said, let's use this as a positive way to get. So that has actually outshone the negative. I've had a lot of support, and it's really been heartwarming. It's really restored my faith in human nature, I have to say.